The far-right AfD party is rising in the polls here in Germany, and they do want to get into government at some point. So they need to train up young people now who would eventually be able to fill these positions. But they've got a problem. They had a youth wing, but it came close to being banned a few months ago. So what did the AfD do? They founded a new youth wing last weekend, and there were massive protests in the town where that founding event was held. And my colleague Matt Moore was there for us and will tell us all about it. So very good that you're here in the studio with us. And also Hans Pfeiffer is here. Hans, you've been monitoring the AfD and its links to extremist movements in Germany and in Europe for DW for decades now. So let's start with you. Why did it become necessary for the AfD to found a new youth wing?
The old one was becoming that radical that it was, as you just said, on its way to be banned. And this is because the old one was not officially part of the party. It was an own association. It was close to the party, but you didn't have to be a member of the AfD to become a member of the party youth. So, and under German law,
it was structurally linked.
Exactly. And so because of that, it would have been much easier in Germany to ban this organization because it was not protected by party law, which is much stricter in Germany, and it's much harder to ban somebody when he's protected by party law. And now the restructuring process was all about to include the young people, include the youth organization into the party, so now they are protected by party law.
And what exactly were the accusations? Why did the previous organization come so close to being banned?
Well, the old one, the Young Alternatives, as they call themselves, they were under surveillance by almost all intelligence authorities in Germany because they were violating the basic principles of the Constitution, which is mainly that nobody should be treated different because of its religion, because of its sex, because of its cultural, or because of where he is from. And the party youth had a problem with that. So they were heavily campaigning against migrants, and they were doubting their equality. Even if they are Germans by citizenship, they were doubting that somebody who is a Muslim and who was migrated to Germany 10 years ago and has now a German passport should have the same rights as somebody who was born here and being a native, whatever that is, German.
Okay, so essentially that also became a bit too difficult for the AfD, the party itself. They didn't want to be exposed to that criticism. They didn't want to risk a ban of their youth wing, whether it was structurally a part of the AfD or not, Matt. So a lot of preparation went into founding this new youth wing that is now structurally closer to the AfD. And that event was planned for months and months. That happened last weekend, where you went to a small western town of Gießen. Police also prepared for months. Tell us, what was the scene on the ground when you got there?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth just mentioning. So the AfD, maybe once a year, they will have a national party meeting where all the members from across the country get together. And that becomes very much a kind of a flashpoint for groups who are fundamentally opposed to what the AfD stands for. And so it tends to be a rallying focal point. So in the build-up to this meeting, there was around 50,000 demonstrators expected, around 20 to 30 different demonstrations expected in this rather small town. It's a university town. And as you said, the police have been preparing for months. And I think there was something like the biggest police operation in the state in its history, basically. 6,000 officers, you know, and in Germany, they'll bring those officers in from all over. And, you know, they had helicopters.
Some even came from Berlin, right? Police officers travelling hundreds of kilometres just to help out on the ground there.
Exactly. And you've got, as well, it's a small town, so you've got the members that want to be there, and you just think there's just a massive amount of incomers just descending on this town. And one of the things the police did, which I think was interesting, is that they basically said, you know, the area, the western part of the city where this meeting was taking place, we're going to shut it off from protests. So you couldn't, just to make, basically turn the meeting into a fortress. The security, I have to say, it was much, much greater this time than it was for the meeting that the party had in January this year. You know, I noticed that. I think they learned from what had happened there because they didn't want scenes like the leader of the party's car being kind of stopped by protesters and her armed security having to get out and draw their weapons and pepper spray and things on protesters. Wanted to avoid all of that. And to a large extent, they did succeed. So there wasn't as many protesters, but there was still around 25 to 30,000 people who turned out. And, you know, a real kind of interesting mix of people. You know, there's lots of families that I saw, young people.
And you spoke to them as well.
Yeah, I spoke to them. It's like very kind of peaceful and just ordinary people. You know, obviously there's people that are always there, you know, the diehards, the people that are involved in unions and so on. You did have like a small, you know, group who tried to and successfully block the motorway routes into to the meeting, and they managed to delay the meeting by 2 hours. But in the whole, it passed by peacefully, and it was a kind of chaotic, hectic day, but there were no huge policing problems or kind of not a lot of arrests, etc. There was a few, I think the police said there was maybe 10 to 15 officers had suffered minor injuries. But yeah, it was...
There was a case of a famous journalist, Paul Ronsheimer, who did get stopped by what he described as really radical and aggressive protesters. Can you tell us what happened to him there?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say, so what you have when you cover a protests in Germany nowadays is that you will have a lot of suspicion from the protesters. What kind of media are you coming from? What are your objectives? Are you some sort of independent YouTuber who's just out to basically try and kind of use us as content to send us up? What's your angle? So I kind of detected this a lot, you know, people who want to know and who don't want to talk to the media, a lot of that. Quite unusual in my experience in the past, you know, you go to a protest with a camera and people want to tell you why they're there. And I received a lot of rejections on Saturday. But in the end, you know, I think we find people and it was fine. And there was no kind of animosity or antagonism towards us. But this one journalist works for kind of a centre-right, right-wing publisher, which has a reputation. And he was, by his own account, was kettled by a mob, many of whom covered their face. And what he would describe, I thought, was it's not that unsurprising, because what you have is you have this kind of mob mentality that just develops, you know, where people are riled up by someone in with a microphone who say, don't give this guy interviews. And then before you know it, people want to express their anger, their frustration at the world that they live in. They would like to do it at the AFD directly, but they're not allowed anywhere near it. And so this guy became the focal point for some of that anger and frustration, and actually completely unacceptable what happened to him. Like, let's just be clear about that. And I think that there should be absolutely no intimidation of journalists at protests in Germany, full stop.
But I think, yeah, there's no justification for it. But I think it's important to understand that he's working for one of the biggest European yellow press papers, which has an infamous credibility for their politics in the past, and who were pushing hard also sometimes, well, very right agenda from time to time. And so he's kind of a symbol. If he's walking on a rally where a lot of leftist groups, and this is kind of for them, somebody who's representing this yellow press system is kind of he's kind of an enemy. It's not a justification for anything, but it's kind of expectable that it could clash in such a moment, because he's kind of infamous for the left groups. Other way around, his tabloid in the past was pushing heavily against left rallies, demonstrators.
And to be fair, he also said he didn't get harmed. It never got really to a point where, you know, he was threatened or his camera team were threatened or anything. And he also said that he can attest to the fact that the vast majority of protesters were peaceful. But of course, that meant that founding event, that meeting that the AfD's youth wanted to hold, was of course shaped by the protests. It got delayed, like you said, and that is something that the leader of the AfD picked up when she arrived on the ground. And let's just listen to what Alice Weidel said.
And what is being done out there, dear left-wingers, dear extremists, you need to look at yourselves, is something that is deeply undemocratic.
There's something kind of funny about Alice Weidel talking like this, because she's pushing hard against those protesters, but at the same time, her party is supporting rallies, even if they not always had been legal, like in the corona times, where people were going onto the street protesting, even it was forbidden by law to protect people from this disease, and where their party was supporting it, and they were campaigning for the freedom to speak out loud against the government, against the others, to protest, to form protests, or the Pegida protests in Dresden, which were heavily racist. They were supporting this, but at this point, when it was against their party, it's kind of, it's highly illegal and criminal. This is kind of double standards.
But it's not the first time, right, Matt?
No, I mean, they're used to it, and it becomes very much a kind of a bit, a part of the story, as you say, you know, it's the, there's the meeting, there's the build up to the meeting where Alice Weidel, you know, was talking about this the week before, saying, you know, this plan, it's absurd, you know, the money that's being spent on it. They come out to stop a democratically elected party, have a meeting. What kind of country are we living in? And that becomes, you know, part of the agenda, and they set the tone there, and that way they, you know, represent themselves as the victim of a kind of absurd protest movement. And of course she took that anger and she took it into the hall, and that was part of the speech. It wasn't a very political speech, but she spent a lot of time talking about that and a few minutes talking about the youth organization. But as Hans says, you know, you speak to the people there and they say, yeah, we're for democracy, this is fine, you know. And actually I had lots of conversations with members and they'd say, yeah, actually, you know, yeah, they're just exercising their democratic right, I've got nothing against that. There's too many, but you can't have a limit on protests. That's just the way it is. We generate a kind of a strong reaction. But obviously for Weidel, really important for her in that speech there to say, you know, this is undemocratic somehow. I guess she would say she's talking about blocking motorways, type of thing.
This is unlawful, that's right. Yeah. But well, as you just said, and let's have a look at the laws in Germany. Yeah. If a political party has a rally, the authorities must enable counter-protesters to be not only to form their own protest, but close to this rally. This is German law because it's democracy, freedom of speech. And so it would be, the courts would have some problems with that if there's a protest on the streets and if there's a counter-protest against it. And authorities say, yeah, you have to keep away like 100 kilometers because it's easier for us. No way. So it's not... it's not a decision that political parties can take. It's the authorities have to guarantee freedom of speech, and even you like it or not, any way around, you must enable this.
But okay. What's interesting, though, just because they did manage to say you can't come over the river in Gießen, so you can't be near it, and so you could hear the protests very faintly in the smoking area. But if you were coming in a car with the AfD, you wouldn't really have necessarily seen the protests. No. And that, so that is... contrary to what you're saying, that is actually the law.
So there's a lot of talk about protests when it comes to the AfD. They tend to generate, they tend to mobilise people who are against them. I do want to move on, though, because that always happens. You end up talking about the protests a long time. We need to explain to our viewers out there, especially when they're not in Germany, why on earth should anybody care about the AfD's new youth wing. Matt, can you just sum up?
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. So, and this was a big focus point of the weekend, was that this is basically what they want it to be, is an elite training school for the next generation of AfD leaders. I think the AfD basically have realised that as they've got more successful, more popular in the polls, more seats in parliament, that they have, that they are on the cusp of winning state elections, becoming the strongest party and potentially even being able to govern, but they have a real dearth of talented people who are ready to fill roles. And so there's a recognition that A, the youth organisation has a role to play there. There's the recognition B, that it is also historically the youth wing has been the wing of the party that has been galvanising other young people, engaging them on social media, and in a way is a vehicle and an engine for ideas in the party. So they just wanted to basically take it in, as we said, into the party and make sure that it was kind of given a protection from a ban. but also it allows the party hierarchy, the people in charge of the party, to exert more control of who's in the youth organisation. They can say whether you're not, you're a member. But fundamentally, I think it's really just a very interesting wing of the party that is signalling the direction of the party, and we can probably talk about some of the
main ideas. Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, exactly, Hans, what is the direction the party is going? What was your impression watching that meeting? How did they portray themselves? What were the ideas that they said openly on stage? Or what kind of an image are they trying to give themselves now?
It's a highly problematic one, and this is why I think, even for an international audience, it is important to care about, because we're not talking about an anti-migration party, or we're not talking about a far right. It always sounds a little bit like the left versus the right and migration. Well, you can oppose it, everything granted. But we're talking about a party where one of the leading figures two times was sentenced for using the paroles of Hitler stormtroopers. He was sentenced for this twice, and he knew the peril he was using. He knew for the second time for sure, he knew what he was saying. They have a member in the European Parliament who was posing for social media with a hand on his heart in front of Hitler's bunker. So we have all of these members. We have members that are press spokesperson in some states that have tattooed the symbol of Himmler's infamous SS, who was organizing the mass murder of the Jews in Europe, on his arm. We have all these figures in this party. It's not only about anti-migration. It's about more. And it's about a party that is doubting many figures in the party. Hard to say. You can debate it. Is it all the party? Is it a structural problem? Or is it just many of the members that are doubting the equality of Germans, that are doubting that people of color, that migrants, that Muslims should have the same rights as every other German? And I think this is what we are talking about. And this party was becoming so much more radical during the last years. They pushed out all those that are not as radical as them. I wouldn't call them liberals, but who were not in the same, marching in the same direction, that it's becoming obvious that we would face a dramatic change in politics in Germany if they would become member of governments in Germany.
And one of the people that you just mentioned, the history teacher who then pretended not to know about the link between his statement and the stormtroopers, is of course Björn Höcke, who is one of the biggest stars for the AfD's youth movement. And he appeared in Gießen, where that meeting was held. Matt, why do they look up to Björn Höcke so much? What is his role for the AfD's youth wing?
Well, I mean, we just talked. So he's obviously one of the more extremist figures in the party. He has defended the youth wing of the party in the past when they've come under criticism for some of their more extreme rhetoric, some of the more extreme positions that they've had. So he's always had a certain kind of relationship. And you see the critics of the party will call it like the Höcke Youth, a kind of play on the Hitler Youth, the Höcke Youth being that's the young wing of the party. So he's there. He doesn't need to be at this meeting in Gießen, but he turned up and as a kind of a subtle show of that I'm with you and you're with me. And when he goes there, you know, he's very much, people want to hear what he's got to say, and he talks about the new generation being kind of, it's important that they continue to be a motor for innovation. But I asked him about this issue that the youth wing has at the moment, which is, as well as what Hans is talking about, which is this kind of just like history of brazen ethnic nationalism, that also the new leader, and in the past they've flirted with and networked with groups that are white supremacist groups, the Identitarian Bewegung being one of them. That's the in German, so the Identitarian Movement. And that's on the list of the AfD's non-cooperation list. So groups that you cannot be a member of and then join our ranks. So I said to him, you know, your new leader has these links, and what do you think? It's like, he says, it's really just a part of the mosaic, this kind of
patriotic. Hang on, I think we need to get a bit of clarity here, because Björn Höcke is obviously not the new leader of the youth wing. So no. Let's just look at the new leader. We've got a soundbite, and let's just hear him before we discuss his personality.
We are the generation that will save our homeland from decline. We are the generation that will take responsibility and fight with all the necessary determination to ensure Germany has a great future. We are Generation Germany. Join us.
So that's their new name, Generation Germany, they call themselves. Can you tell us about who did we just hear and see there, Hans?
I love his appearance because he's such a proper guy.
So Jean-Pascal Horn.
Jean-Pascal Horn, yeah, dressed smart. He's talking like a politician. He's a nice guy. There's nothing nothing in his appearance is kind of radical. But have a look at his past. He was affiliated to hooligan groups in Cottbus, where he's from. He was making an internship at a far-right radical organization, which is under surveillance of the intelligence in Germany. He was campaigning for an organization who is a far-right organization, which was also under surveillance. But it's like, this is the strategy of the nowadays AfD and also now of the new party youth. They look smart, they talk smart in public. There's nothing where you can blame him for being radical. We are Generation Germany.
He's not a skinhead.
No, we want to feel safe in Germany. We want to have good works. We want to have affordable houses. We don't want to have, we want to feel good in our own country. We want to live our traditions. Well, nothing to struggle with. You can oppose it or not, but it's not. Sounds very radical, but there's an agenda behind it. And if you look at his biography, you will see, okay, he's not only this nice guy. There is much more. And so this is always hard, like for media or for others to talk about, because when somebody has an appearance like this, if you're always like, yeah, but look at his past. It's like, yeah, come on, it's the past. But he's
we all make
very
mistakes.
Well. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, fair enough. But look at his ties he has now. Look the way he's talking about the Constitution. Look at the way he's talking about far-right organizations. Look who's he's himself associating with. And this is highly problematic. These are not only nice guys. This is highly aggressive political movement that wants drastic changes and where you can doubt if they are always based on the constitutional values in Germany.
But, you know, one of the things is that they will always react when you talk to them. And I've done that as well. They say, yeah, okay, were you not young at one point? That is the one thing that they reply. The other thing is that they completely dismiss the categorization that the German intelligence agencies give the AfD, because they say it's politically motivated, because Germany's intelligence service is essentially a part of the German Interior Ministry, hence their conclusion. Yeah. It is something where the current government is just trying to prevent an opponent from becoming too strong.
Yeah, but can I not come in here? Because that is, you're right, that's the classic argument, right? That it's politically motivated. Jean-Pascal Horn doesn't distance himself from the groups. So he's not saying, oh, these are mistakes, you know, I was young, like that.
Exactly,
he's
yeah.
the opposite.
Yeah.
He's saying, I will never distance myself from these groups. And why you can say, okay, but the AfD has said that these groups are incompatible, membership of these groups, the identitarian movement, is incompatible with AfD membership. Why would they say that if they didn't have a problem with it? So there's a contradiction in terms there. There's a, as you say, it's hypocrisy, you know, to say we have this list, we don't touch these groups, we're sensible, we're a sensible party, and we're being demonized by the media. But at the same time, you have people who are leading your youth movement who are saying, I'll never distance myself from these groups. And actually, I asked the co-leader of the party at the weekend, Tino Kropala. I said to him, what's going on here? You know, is the youth movement basically just a kind of, they have a blank check to do what they like and ignore the rules and fraternise with these groups that you consider to be extremist? And he says, there's no rules against talking to them. So you can see that they're trying to kind of...
Hang on, he said, we've got them on our list and we will not collaborate with them, but of course you can talk to them?
He actually said the list is about, you cannot be a member of one of those groups and then be a member of the AfD. The list is not about whether or not you can talk to them and work with them.
Okay. Yeah, but of course there are other figures that also caused a bit of a stir at the meeting, and I just want to play you a soundbite and then we'll talk about it afterwards.
Die Liebe und Reue zu Deutschland teilen wir uns hier gemeinsam. Denn was wir im individuellen Herzen tragen, teilen wir uns hier alle in entschlossener Eintracht. Das Wohl und die Aufrechterhaltung unseres Volkes, unserer Heimat, unserer Kultur und die Sicherstellung einer Zukunft, wo ein deutsches Kind nie wieder Scham empfinden sollte, deutsch zu sein, weil es zu einer Minderheit an einer deutschen Schule wurde.
So I think it's difficult to translate, but what caused the stir was not so much even the content of what this man was saying. Matt, you were there. You experienced it as well. Why was everybody suddenly talking about this man on stage? Mm. Especially if you're only listening to this podcast, maybe just describe what happened there, because there, you know, lots of people were sort of in disbelief of what they'd just seen and heard.
Mm. So the media at this in the hall, I was probably 150 metres from where this man was speaking, because it was a great big hall and the media at the AFD is always put like right at the back and you're not allowed to go to the front to kind of get a feel.
That's so different, by the way, from the Greens party convention or the SPD or the Conservatives. I was there at the Greens convention and you just... Essentially, you can talk to anybody you want. You can get very close to the stage. The SPD have cordoned off certain areas now because of security concerns, but it's just not very common. What the AFD do is very specific. Mm. They design very small amounts of space to journalists, just a side note.
So as he started speaking, you could just sense that in the room, people started engaging with what he was saying, and then there was kind of murmurs and kerfuffle, and then people, and just gradually journalists just pulling their phones out to record his speech, because as you see, it was a very it was a provocative speech. You know, there was the rolling of the R's, there was the style, the wagging finger.
It's Hitler style.
It's basically a Hitler style. I mean, that's what he's been called online, a kind of Hitler clown. Yeah. And so now you know, one person in the crowd said, as a response to his speech, was like, "Are you an undercover agent of the German Republic?"
And the person in the crowd was a member of the AFD youth, right?
Yes.
Not a journalist.
Kind of, because they were just so kind of baffled that someone could give such a speech there, because it was clearly, in style, very provocative. In content, actually not really that much different from what you heard in other speeches. And now there's a whole debate about whether it was a satire, whether this person had infiltrated the party. He's been a member apparently for a month. I did an interview with him before, because I saw him, and then I in the hall outside, and I saw him with the blue dinner jacket, and I thought that sounds like someone. It looks like someone I should speak to, and he was much more kind of mild in the interview, which
and did he roll his R?
I don't think so. I would need to listen to it again. But he did. But he was clearly an eccentric individual character, which you get a lot of at the AFD, especially these party meetings. But it was a provocative speech, but not the only one.
But hang on, he told you something, because I think it's just interesting to hear what he said to you when you asked him about the share of women.
Yeah, so that was right. Yeah, so I... you know, I do these interviews before or throughout just to try and get a sense of, like, what do people make of these issues that other people are seeing, you know. And one of the big issues with the youth organisation, the party as a whole, but the youth organisation particularly, is that it's very male-dominated, you know. And so I said to him, look, where are the women here? And he said, that's a difficult topic, yeah. We don't have a lot, but the ones that we do have are very pretty. So that kind of gave
Great.
Me a sense
qualifies
that
qualifies them for political
so
positions.
I don't know whether. Yeah, I still don't know whether or not he was serious. It's hard to say.
I think, but it doesn't matter. But even if he was a kind of a character and a satirical performance, and it was like an undercover guy, voluntarily or whatever, what was in his mind? I think more important is what you just said. It was the content. Most typical content you hear on every gathering of AFD and every AFD youth organizations. So it was not uncommon, these speeches. And if you are on the ground, see all the people there. Well, you have the last party convention I have been, or we have been in Riesa, there had been people tattooed with skulls all over their shaved heads. So it was like really some characters, not only this one. So the party tries now to blame him for being kind of an undercover agent. But I think you have to keep in mind, even he was, I don't know. Nobody knows at the moment what was in his mind. But even if he would have been, that would have no implication for what this youth organization is campaigning for, because it was like what he was asking for and what he was campaigning for, the typical AfD stuff.
And also he got a lot of votes, right? It's not like everybody
and he was elected.
And
well, he was somebody, he was a delegate. He was elected. He was
elected in the first place from his own local. The local group of the AfD sent him there to Gießen. And then in Gießen, he got how many? 85 votes.
So I think so. I think there was around 600 votes were cast for this particular role. Yeah. And he, despite that speech, and despite people saying, "Are you an undercover agent?" Yeah. And despite, you know, he began his speech by saying, "Comrades," which is an absolute no-go with the AfD, comrades. Yeah. And then despite being kind of picked up on that, you know, he still garnered 80 to 90 votes. So there was clearly some people, either they thought it was funny and they're going to play along with it, or they thought this guy is saying everything that I agree with. Particularly this comment about just because a pig, he said at some point, he said a pig, just because a pig is born in a cow stall doesn't make it a cow. And that is a very right-wing extremist point of view, which is, i.e., if you don't look like German, if you don't look German and you aren't German and you're born in Germany, it doesn't make you German. And this is a kind of common trope that we see.
Second class citizen
that the security services and the constitution basically is very firmly clear against, that there are no one and two classes of citizens.
Okay, so both of you will keep monitoring that youth wing and see how it will be integrated into the party's structures and into the strategy, because we've got a big election year coming up next year, lots of elections in regional states where the AfD is trying to get into powerful positions or to make it very, very hard for the rest of the parties to form a government without them. So essentially everybody else would have to get together. And I would just like to hear your predictions. What are we going to see? How is that going to work? Where are they going to, the AfD leaders, where are they going to use their new youth wing? What strategy? Is that social media? Is that campaigning? Matt, can you just make a prediction?
I think all of those things. I mean, I think that they realise that they want the youth wing to be, they probably do want it to become somehow more attractive to young women, because they realise that there's a deficit there that they need to address. And I think that they would like to see, go back to this thing that the youth wing is very, it's kind of a niche activity to be involved in politics at a young age. And I think that there's a kind of, within the AfD, there's a kind of, they look longingly at what people like Charlie Kirk have managed to achieve in the US, where you go into universities and you make our positions kind of palatable to this educated group of young people, and try to kind of really kind of build out support on the university level, because at the moment it's not really strong among educated young people. So I think that would be one of the things that they try to do, and basically just continue to kind of become a radical engine for the party, that continue to do that. But maybe they try to kind of, as Hans touched on already, which is, you know, look the part is very important. No more kind of cosplaying Himmler and just look professional, continue to be radical, but sound and look professional, because they realise that that's very important.
Yeah, the party entered a new phase, because in the past they were, by radicalization, they were grabbing attention in the media, in public, and that enabled them to grow and to becoming, well, like in Eastern Germany, now the most successful parties in elections. And this is in a new phase. Now they are grabbing for power. They just need some slight growth.
Yeah, in the eastern part of Germany, they're now the big tent party that the Conservatives or the Social Democrats used to be.
But the problem for them is, it's not a problem, it's their will, that they do not want, they are not looking for coalitions. They want to grab for the whole power. This party is opposing all other parties. They want to destroy them. They do not want a conservative coalition partner. They want to destroy them. They want the whole power. But to get this whole power, you need at elections more than 40%. Otherwise, you won't be able to govern alone. And to get more than 40%, you have to keep in mind that the society in Germany as a whole is not radical. It's a moderate society. And most people, just latest research studies, social studies proved that most of the people in Germany are not interested in a total radicalization. They want solutions. They want a moderate tone. They are tolerant, but they are unhappy with politics. And so this is where the AfD is trying to make a point. They need more moderate voters to get this success. And therefore, they at this moment, in this new phase, they do not need a youth organization that is so radical, so openly racist, that makes it hard for the party as a whole to grab for these last voters from a more moderate part of the society. So they want a more domesticated youth organization, which is maybe they're internally not less radical, but they're smooth and they know how to behave. They can show up like Jean-Pascal Holm, the new leader, maybe with a radical past, but he's this nice guy, Generation Germany. Come on, what's the problem?
As one MP said to me, it's the same old wine, just a new bottle.
Yeah.
All right. And that brings us to the end of this episode. You've got a full Berlin briefing now on the launching event of the AfD's youth wing. We'll keep a very close eye on them and, of course, on what that means for the other parties. We'll be keeping you up to date in the episodes to come. For now, thank you very much. Make sure that you subscribe to our Berlin Briefing newsletter that comes out once a week, and do leave us our comments. Till next time.